When the astronomer looks at the moon, he sees nothing but a rock. But when two lovers behold the moon, it smiles down upon them in recognition of their romance. And this is Hyperborean Radio. With me, as always, is Jeff, and I am Ike.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Let's get our thanks out of the way. And
thanks to Spiffy. Thanks to all our patrons on Patreon. And you can back us there as well if you'd like. You can also back us on Buy Me a Coffee or directly on Spotify. And you can check out our work and our posts, of course, on various podcast platforms, as well as X and Telegram, and of course, HyperboreanRadio.com.
Which is the most important one.
Yes, it's where we got all the cool shit.
Right.
Except for this. This is also there, but it's also here.
Yes. All right. So, what is paganism, I guess? What is the ethnic way?
Well, and specifically, because when you say what is paganism, it turns very quickly into, well, we need to define the religion and the dogma and the doctrines and what was the ranking system and all this other stuff. And it's like, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Really, it's just not a thing.
Well, and this is the thing. This is what it all boils down to. By and large, is asking someone to explain what paganism is a little like asking a fish to describe water.
Right. And here's the thing is, first, he doesn't even understand the concept of water because it's around him all the time. Then he's probably going to misexplain it because he doesn't understand it from a third-party perspective because he's just in it all the time. Well, you swim through it. How do you swim? And as soon as he starts trying to swim, he's going to fuck it up. He's like, well, I just do this. Well, yeah, but how do you do that? Well, first I swing to this side, and then I swing to that side.
To and fro.
Right, to and fro.
Stop and go.
There we go. And then he's going to start swimming all janky. It's like, and I'm glad because on X I see people, they're trying. They're trying, and I'm really happy about it, and like, somebody will show us some stuff from Lithuania or from the Balkans and look at this wonderful pagan tradition that these people are doing other than something's off. And well, I figured out what it is. It's because they're trying. And I'm glad that they're trying. But the very fact that they're trying actively to do a specifically pagan thing is what makes it not quite right. It's, you used a great analogy before about the bicycle. It's like riding a bike. How do you ride a bike? The reality of it is you just get on it and ride it.
Yes.
But as soon as you start thinking about it, you're going to start wobbling and fall over and you can't ride it. But to get good at riding the bike, you have to ride the bike and acknowledge that you're riding a bike. But you can't think about riding the bike. Otherwise, next thing you know, you're on the ground.
Yes. It's actually a good analogy for how ethnic faith works. And it's part of the issue with what is the word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Paganism is more of a category. Now, it's specifically applied to Europe because when people start applying it to like Zoroastrianism,
right,
or Shinto,
actually,
Hindu or whatever, it doesn't work. It doesn't count.
It's always in the end rejected.
Well, and we can see these things really blatantly when we look at other cultures. We can see the remains of Shinto all throughout the Japanese culture. We can see the remains of the wise old buffalo in the Indian culture. But when we look at our own stuff, we're just like,
we are the fish that's in the water.
Yes.
We're the person pulling the tricks on the bike. He doesn't actually think about it. He just does it.
Well, the more something is just an extension of yourself, the better that you become at it, but the less you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of crazy. Like, quite often the most heathen thing a person can do is hug a child, go for a walk, and just enjoy the outdoors.
Yes. Well, but to make something a bit more blatant, because everyone always loves the extreme examples, the stork that brings babies. The stork that brings babies is actually a remnant of folklore, specifically like German paganism.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably in other areas because things were always a little loosey-goosey.
Well, it's because we share.
Yes. Well, we share, and let's be honest, the lines are not as strict as people want them to be,
right,
but they're also not as broad as people want them to be.
Right.
But when it comes to the stork that brings babies, most people will know about the stork that brings babies. Most people know that it's not literally a stork that brings babies. If it is, I'm not getting cuckolded by a freaking bird.
Right.
But basically, we all know about it. We know what that symbol means. Like, if you see an expectant mother's sign out in front of a building.
At a parking space. So this is fairly common, at least here. You got the expectant mother's parking space, and they'll have the stork. The good ones will have the stork with the little baby satchel on it, right? And this is animism. This is paganism. I've noticed people get twisted. It's not when they scratch out or defile where it says expectant mothers on the sign, but don't touch that picture. They will get slightly upset when people, you know, graffiti the words. They lose their fucking mind when you fuck with the picture.
Oh, yeah. And this is the thing, is I don't think everybody that parks at the expectant mother or acknowledges the expectant mother parking spot is for expectant mothers is doing a pagan act consciously.
Mm-hmm.
But the symbol, the story, the value ascribed
to it.
Well,
and that's it right there, is they're not doing it consciously. And that's what makes it so damn accurate.
Well, and the people that want to convince us we have nothing benefit from our, I don't want to say ignorance, but our pinhole style looking for our traditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they want us to put on the special robe, have the special bowl, have the special incense, have the special ceremony, have the special...
Well, because they can profit off of it.
Not only do they profit off it, but they keep us from actively doing it.
Well, it's
from
because...
From being it.
Well, we did a whole podcast on this, is you can boil down most of our celebrations to food, fire, and people.
Mm-hmm.
And really, once it's become more not that than that, especially if it's highly commercialized, like you have to just buy shit. Like every holiday boils down to buy shit.
Even modern music festivals, like we was talking about earlier. Even modern music festivals, they aren't, like people still go, but we understand something's off. Something's wrong.
Well, it's even part of our folklore, both in the pagan and the Christian, because what was the go-to thing that pagans used to do when they would celebrate or even just go for a picnic? They'd have music. Sometimes they'd have costumes, you know, your mumming plays and whatnot. And what the church did was basically say that's devilry.
Yeah.
Which is why things like all the peasant instruments like drums and flutes and...
Well, and guitars were banned from churches for a long time.
Guitars, violins. I mean, the devil plays a golden violin.
Well, fiddle, but it's the same instrument.
It's the same instrument. It's just how you play it.
Right. You can play the violin in the church, but you dare not play the fiddle.
Yes.
Don't saw those chords.
Yes. Which tells you specifically what kind of fiddle, what kind of violin player the devil supposedly is.
Right.
But that itself is a continuation of pagan concepts. It's just in what way?
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies part of it is much my go-to comparison, and it's not because it's a one-for-one. Nothing is a one-for-one, even necessarily within Hyperborean tribes. But my go-to to often point this out is Japan. And it's not because Japan is so like us.
Well, and Japan's good to use for an example because it's
so
it's not us.
It's so different. We can see it. And then it also had a similar thing happen where it has its ethnic faith. Its ethnic faith has been overly formalized. Its ethnic faith.
Regimented.
Yes.
That's the word.
Regimented. Formulated. All that stuff. And its ethnic faith permeates everything. And there's parts of it that are overly formalized and regimented. And then there's parts that aren't. And they're actually more regimented by nature than we are. They're mm-hmm. more structured in their ceremony and ritual. And then they also had a universalist faith come in with Buddhism.
Right.
Which
then all universalist faiths do this. Define what it is that you do.
Oh, yeah. Well, they even do the same shit that, like, Christianity did. It's actually interesting. Like, Buddhism did the whole, like, your gods are demons. But that's okay because these demons are good now because, like, Buddha said so.
Right.
Or they also did the thing I found like an almost one for one Universalist story, which is we found a statue of this insert special thing that's technically not a god, but is basically a god, mm-hmm. saint, bodhisattva, whatever, in the lake. So now this is a sacred spot to the thing we found in the lake.
Yeah. Yeah, because our Universalist religion is true, same as all the cultures and peoples of the world have the flood myth. Yes, it has nothing to do with the fact that Christians went around the world sharing this myth.
Yes, but
that couldn't be it at all.
But they can't always see these things. That's part of the interesting mm-hmm. thing. And you can see where things get twisted and sort of apply a similar concept. But the reason I'll point that out is not, oh, we must model our stuff off of Shinto, because that doesn't work either.
No, no.
No, but
no, we have to model our stuff off from us and our nature.
Yes, but it gets people to think about how permeated our ethnic way is. And the powers that be, or whatever you want to call them, benefit from us looking through a pinhole at what we think our ethnic faith is. Like, if it doesn't have not work, if it doesn't have a worm, if it doesn't say Odin was here, all of a sudden it doesn't count?
Right. Which is just silly. I mean, the very act of making cheese, just cheese making, is a very European thing. It's a very heathen thing. It is a very tribal thing. Because all of our different tribes, we all make cheese. We've all made cheese. But we all do it in a slightly different way. We make slightly different cheeses.
Well,
we all prefer slightly different cheeses.
Well, and then this brings me to this, which is, I compare it to Japan, not because I'm comparing all of Europe to Japan, but each individual tribe. Because Japan itself is not a singular country, much like England, much like Germany, mm-hmm. much like France. It's made up of several macro groups,
right?
Several tribal groupings. Like, England is not just England. It's Brittonic, it's Gaelic, it's all these things. And then there's different groups within England, and I won't try to name them all.
Well, in Japan, we watched a video before you shared it with me where they was talking about Shinto. And they can describe Shinto. But then the reality of it is, from the outside looking in, the things that make Shinto Shinto isn't the temple. It isn't the idols that they have, or the altars that they have, or this ritual or that ritual. It's the simple act of, for them, taking off their shoes before they go inside. They don't even think about it. It's just something that they do.
Well, another good example is actually Itadakimasu in Japan. And I don't want to talk too much about Japan, but for us it would be saying grace. Mm-hmm. But except, like, you actually had this when you were young.
Oh, yeah. And you confused the shit out of me.
Yeah, because you went to a Catholic family for dinner, and they said grace, and you were so confused, and you were like, wait, I thought you guys were Christian. Because your family said a similar, not exact, obviously, but similar prayer or blessing, but specifically around harvest.
To call it a blessing or a prayer isn't quite accurate. It's more just simply saying thanks in general, and for everybody to be aware. So the outside looked the same. The intention, the inside of it, was very different.
Yes.
But yeah, and it's because they used words like Lord and bounty and harvest. And we only said it really during the big ceremonies, like Thanksgiving. The hunting holiday. Most people will say grace. Well, so did heathens. We had a, I guess you could call it a prayer, but it's more a reminder of we're all together, and we should be thankful, to use the American term, grateful that, yes, we're together, and there's a bounty, and we get to share in this thing, and let's enjoy it.
Yes.
Because we have it.
Well, and that's just one of many examples of these little leftover tidbits that we don't even think about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the reasons I have this complaint where pagans are giving too much stuff to the Christians.
Yeah. It's actually the other way around.
Yes. Like, there is almost nothing in our culture that is Christian. There are things that are Christianized, but that is not the same thing.
Well, and this here's something else that I run into quite often. And there's people that's really confused, especially the Christians. They're like, well, I'm Christian. There's nothing that you can say or do about it. And I'm like, I don't want to. But this is what I want you to do and what you should do if you're going to be Christian. Read your Bible beginning from the front to the back. And when you get done, read it again. And then that's not enough. Go to church every Sunday, at least every Sunday. Most churches will have like what, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday services in conjunction. Go to church all the time. Do your religion. And the look of fucking horror that washes over them is just beautiful.
Yes.
But with heathenry, it's with our tribal ethnic ways, it's not something that can actually be described. It's not something that needs to be taught. As soon as you try teaching it, you missed.
Well, and this ties into another thing, which is, I've brought this up before. Part of the issue I have is, on the one hand, our people need to understand how important these things are to us. On the other hand, it's a double-edged sword, because once we understand that they're important, we start doing it out of obligation rather than because we want to.
Right.
And that is a problem, because then it'll die. So on the one hand, I need to learn more about this stuff to save it. On the other hand, I need to find a way to get people interested about it and realize it's important.
Right.
But
well,
mainly they have to find it fun.
Right. It's like that post that I did a while ago. I don't know when it was. But I was like, if you want people to do this, first you have to get excited about it. You have to have fun with it. You have to look forward to it. You have to want to do it.
Well,
to get other people excited, to for them to want to do it, for them to actually do it.
Well, it's a lot like religion. A lot of people are trying to make paganism a religion. And much like all ethnic faiths, if you use the universalist structured political system that calls itself a religion as your baseline, you will never see it. It will seem like it doesn't even exist, like it was all an illusion. Like the thing some Christians claim that all pagans were like non-religious atheists before Christianity showed up. So nothing was replaced. It was just given, you know, that despite the fact that's not what happened. But that's the argument they use. And it's because from the Christian perspective, yes, we didn't have a religion. The closest is like Rome and Greece because of how civilized
they were.
Well,
when you come from a regimented space, and then you look at a truly spiritual people, they appear to be atheists. It's the same way, which is why the Japanese Shinto thing is such a good example. They're extremely, the real Shinto people, followers of Shinto in Japan, they are really, truly, and deeply spiritual. Everything that they do is spiritual. But from the outside looking in, they appear atheist, very atheistic. Like, well, they don't really believe in anything. Well, no, they do. You just have to slow down and actually look. And it's easier for us to see with them because they're not us. And there's a push there trying to separate Shinto that's put out from the world from Shinto that they actually do. Everything from washing before they get into the bath to taking their shoes off before they enter their homes. This is them. Well, the same thing applies to us, except for it's not the same way. It's,
well, because we're not Japanese.
Yeah, because we're not Japanese. It is an expression of who we are as a people. The cold open that we did, it's true. The scientist, the astronomer, he looks at the moon and all he sees is a rock. The second part of it, where the lovers look up at the moon and the moon smiles down in recognition of the romance. We don't need to be taught that. It just is. We know that it's true. When we go swimming and we become part of the water and we just flow through it, this is who we are.
Well, the way I would put it is, part of what it is people are overthinking it. And they're too detached. It's part of the giveaway. We noticed this a while ago. When people try to venerate gods that they're not related to, they get really freaking weird with it.
And very strange.
Actually, yes, that's what I meant to say. I got to get used to using weird properly. Still. But when it comes to like people that are in the north and try to venerate the Roman or Greek gods, they get really freaking esoteric with it. Yeah. All of a sudden, Hermes is also like Thoth. And it's like some ancient sage god that's also in this area. And it's like, and then the people that actually
venerate. Freya and Aphrodite, they're the same god because they both have to do with love, who is also the same as.
And it's because they're too separated. Mm-hmm. It's like trying to describe a job. Like, let's go with something that most people know about, but no one's ever met. Katana makers. Mm-hmm. So like the Japanese swordsmiths, basically.
Oh.
Everybody knows about the katana. Na 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 na. Anyway. But most people have never met a single person that has made one.
Right.
So what comes to your mind? Something extremely generic. The same is true if I try to describe a god that you have no cultural significance
for.
Well,
and it's not just the extremely generic. It's the extremely generic fantasy aspects of it. Because, the katana is so sharp it cuts the light and then you become invisible behind the blade. What?
He cuts so fast that he cut through the atoms and didn't cut anything.
You know, and people get strange with it because they don't actually understand how it's made, what its actual use was. They don't understand the weapon itself. And so then they end up going to anime or the samurai movie and the magical aspects that they've been taught, that they've seen about it. And they get very, very strange and really attached to these concepts of the katana na 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 na.
Na 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 na.
But they will get borderline violent when you're like, but it's a giant. It's not even giant. It's actually a katana.
It's a knife for us.
You see a real katana from our perspective as Hyperboreans. It's a long knife. It's for them. It's a two-handed weapon. For us, it's a one and a half hand weapon.
Maybe
that's. The size of a fucking Bowie knife. It's a short sword from our perspective. Oh, no, but the katana is 36 inches long. Yes, from the, and this is a big one, so not even your standard. 36 inches long from the tip of the blade to the end of the handle, and this is one that's made on scale for us.
Yes.
Theirs are actually in the 24 to 30-ish inches overall. This is a fucking knife. We call those gladius.
Yes.
They're short swords.
What it is our people, like take another example. You brought up Aphrodite because a lot of people go Aphrodite and Freya or Freya and Hera. They're the same or whatever. It's because they don't know either of the gods. And then simply put, in reality, they're too far removed from right. them.
Well, and that's why in our website, we focus on the who of the gods. It helps separate this out. Aphrodite, god of love. Yep. Freya, god of love. Yep.
Well, it's like painters. If I describe a painter, you have a generic concept of a painter. But if I say Picasso, you might have a positive or a negative view. Jackson Pollock, I usually have a negative view of him. Albert Bierstadt. And then I start naming people that you might not even know anything about their work or their life. And you're just like, uh-huh, yeah, he's mm-hmm. a painter.
Yep, he's just like Michelangelo.
Yes.
And no.
And a lot of it just boils down to they never really consider it beyond that. The gods, basically, because we're so used to the concept of saints or angels or Yahweh, basically, we view each of the deities as basically fulfilling just a micro function of a macro figure.
Right.
So Freya is love. Therefore, you pray to her for love. Right?
Right? It's well, and we're fed this lie that Christianity is Christianity, especially in America. But anybody that's gone to different churches, talked to different Christians from different areas, knows this isn't the case. Why are we running through this fucking lie for who we are?
Well, it's a little
the Irish is not the same as the Britons. They are not the same as the Gauls. They are not the same as the Alpines. Even though we're part of a macro group, we have a shared heritage. We have a shared biospirit. But we're still different. We have different outlooks on life.
Well, it's a little like saying the bears in Finland, the brown bears in northern Japan, and the brown bears in Alaska are all the same thing.
And
they're
all
brown bears.
But they're not.
Yes. But I guess my point with that is, now take a look at a figure that people do know about and do care. And is typically, I classify them as a god or a godlike being. And again, this is part of the issue, is it's not. We did a whole podcast on this too, is there is not this really rigid hierarchy that's easy to pinpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but what it makes a god, like most people, if I said Robin Hood, they know Robin Hood. They care about Robin Hood, at least in this country. And then if you start bad-mouthing or mistreating Robin Hood, they don't like it.
Right. Well, and you can tell new stories about Robin Hood, or you pull out an old story that nobody's heard. And it's fine. We'll roll with it. But Robin Hood damn well better stay Robin Hood. It's the who of Robin Hood. He has to be heroic. You try turning Robin Hood into a just straight-up villain, you might get punched in the face. Don't do that. Yes, Robin Hood steals, but Robin Hood is not a villain.
Well, and then you have things like, let's stick to England, because
why not? They got a lot of stories that people are familiar with.
Robin Hood, Herne the Hunter, Wayland, John Barleycorn, Puck, and on and on and on and on. There's a lot of different figures from England specifically, and mm-hmm. I could go on, and some of them people can pinpoint are Welsh, some of them are just Britonic. Even the personification currently of Great Britain, Britannia, is just a modernized version of Brigid, who the isle is supposedly named after.
Well, and we only know this, we only say this because that's what the people that drew her said.
Yes, it was to basically piggyback off of a continuing cult of that deity. And this is part of what becomes an issue, is I'm too far removed from a lot of these. I try to get the who. I do my best to get the who, looking at the stories, looking and considering them. But in the end, because I'm too far removed from the place there, and while some of these figures, Robin Hood, King Arthur, their stories are still told over here, others, like, there might be like a few English towns that have a John Barleycorn tradition in America. But
in
general,
it's not a thing over here.
Yeah, it's like Krampus. Krampus is now a household name, but people are still thinking he's like the evil Christmas devil.
Well, and you got John Barleycorn. I believe that he's usually represented by a scarecrow over in England, right?
Basically a person made out of an amalgam of wheat or rye.
And
barley.
We have scarecrows over here, but they're not one in the same. It's not a one for one.
Well, and then that brings us to another thing that's just an everyday pagan concept, which is scarecrows. They're pagan idols. So are snowmen.
Yeah.
Like, the church actually used to burn snowmen because they considered them idols. Like, this is a little secret, is the Christian church is very good at pointing out what paganism is. They just call it devilry and then twist it to something extremely fucked up.
Well, and this thing that people fall into, the regimented, everything has to be regimented and ceremonialized and so on and so forth. They do this because the church says so. And if you think that that history isn't influenced by the church, then you haven't been paying attention. But there's people that will say, well, the snowman is not an ancient pagan totem or symbol, because it didn't exist before, random fucking year out of my ass because I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but it did not exist before 1352, because this was the first time it was mentioned by the church and they couldn't get the people to stop doing it and they burned it. You're missing the point. They couldn't get people to stop doing it. It means they existed before that.
Well, basically, by the time the church or the nobility has noticed something and is complaining about it, assume it's at least a few hundred years old.
Yeah.
It's
a safe bet.
Well, it's like the jack-o'-lantern, specifically made out of a pumpkin in the United States and North America, was complained about in what I think was central, one of the big cities in, like, Canada somewhere. They were complaining about the pumpkins around Halloween and all this freaking pumpkins.
Well, and they even admitted it came from the U.S.
Yes.
From the dirty gales from the U.S., took it to Canada, and they couldn't get them to stop doing it.
Yeah, so It spread that far, and then it was deeply rooted, and then they complained about
it. Right, and then people will point at those newspaper articles and say this didn't exist before this time, while ignoring the fact that they said that it came from this other region, and they couldn't stop them. We've been trying for decades to get them to not do this, but then it doesn't exist until it's written down? Yes. What?
Well, and this
when did this become a rule?
Well, and part of the giveaway that a lot of modern paganism has drifted away from being actual paganism and become a religion is this. You do a specific action to be pagan. So, like, you form an altar and you do your, like, prayer or whatever the Wiccans do. Mm-hmm. Or you go to whatever the made-up bullshit temple thing people are doing nowadays.
Put on your fancy dress.
Yeah, your purple cloak or whatever people are into these days. And they go to that thing, and then they come home, and they just go back to whatever they were doing anyway.
Right.
Well, that is a religion. When you are specifically taking time out of what you would do otherwise.
They are practicing the religion when they're doing all the other stuff, and they're heathen as soon as they stop.
Yes. Well, it's a lot like they used to complain about people in Scandinavia. They'd go to church, and then as soon as church was over, they'd go up into the mountains and venerate their gods. Probably what they were honestly doing was just going up and having a picnic, maybe going to the lake, maybe hanging out in the mountains.
And it's traditional. It's important to do this at this time. It's even like now. It's crazy because some of the most heathen people that you meet call themselves Christian, and some of the most Christian people that you meet call themselves heathens. It's the strangest fucking thing.
Well, it's odd because, like, there's a Uller Fest out in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Supposedly that got started, you know, I think in the 1900s, like mid-1900s, I think.
Early.
But anyway, and it was from, I think they imported Norwegian ski instructors to that area to kind of get it all started, and they're the ones that brought stories of Uller.
Right.
So how Christian was Scandinavia at this period? One of the funniest things to me is the Scandinavians will publicly decry the heroes, quote-unquote, that brought them Christianity. Like, those bastards brought the church. But I'm a good Christian.
Yes.
You are.
And don't you dare say that we're not Christian now, but fuck those motherfuckers that brought us Christianity. What?
It is the weirdest thing. Scandinavians are confusing.
But it's confusing, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. Well, as soon as you try, then you're not doing. But if you don't do, then you're not doing.
Yes. So you have to try, but you also have to do it effortlessly, and you have to practice, but it's also got to just be basically a flow state.
Yeah, a flow state. That's kind of a good way to put it. And then, well, heathenry is animism. Well, what is animism? Animism is our cold open. It is also Looney Tunes. It is also
Redwall.
Redwall, Brave Little Toaster. It doesn't have to be around animals, and it isn't always humanizing things, even though it is also humanizing things like the rock that sits there and smiles at you every day when you go out and sit on your porch.
Well, we've gone over things like trolls and elves and fae, and we've talked about them, and those are also part of animism. And then
so is talking to grandma when you're cooking dinner, and it's something that grandma taught you how to cook, and you just start talking to grandma. That is also...
Well, it's like when our people visit our graves, the graves of the people we love and care about.
The graves of the unknown. That's another one that's fairly large, actually, on YouTube.
Do we think that this is a religious act consciously, a spiritual act, when we're doing it? Or do we just miss grandma? Do we just feel for the forgotten? And this is part of how it's effortless. And then there's things that we've done instinctively in the past that have sort of been ixnayed. Like there used to be a custom of visiting the graves on Halloween. Mm-hmm. Or... the holidays used to be more...
Or Memorial Day or whatever.
Oh, that's what I was going to bring up, is the holidays used to be more varied. So, like, when you went to...
Well, and they regimented them. A really good and easy to find example of it is Memorial Day, right? The government stepped in, and there's documentation on it. They couldn't stop the people from doing Memorial Day. And it was interfering with the workforce.
Yes, especially because depending on where you were, it could be done as early as February or as late as June.
Right, and so they decided to regiment it, to formalize it, to It is on this day, and we can't stop you from doing it, so do it on this day. Because they couldn't stop people from doing it, and it's the regimentation of it. And then if you look historically to now, because if you just look at now, you don't notice because you're too close. But if you look historically to now, it's been becoming less and less and less popular as the years go by.
Oh, yeah. The holidays are dying.
There's a reason that everything is regimented. They want it regimented so that you won't do it.
Well, and part of it is they've overly regimented it. Part of it is also most families don't have a youngest generation that's children right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you can't do holidays without kids. Some of them you can't. Like, I don't really think you can do Easter without kids, especially right. How we do it in the U.S.
Well, and also quite often it requires more than a single family. I've seen families not do things because, well, it's just us.
Yeah. It requires more. Like, why do the special thing if it's just everybody who's here when we watch The X-Files?
Right.
So, but another thing that we used to do was we used to understand things kind of localize.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a good example of this is what we used to do with gnomes. And people care about the gnomes on their thing. Like, some people don't like gnomes. But, like, gnome statues are another good example of this. Them or old figurines from family lines or, like, the Twiggy people with the hair or nutcrackers are all different forms of, like, portraits, household idols
mm-hmm.
to the household god, the homestead man. But what a lot of people don't realize is the homestead man, the tomte, the nisei in Sweden, its typical, you know, signature outfit was just when they started drawing them, when they started talking about what they looked like, it was just the common peasant wear,
right.
Which is why,
well,
like,
and something natural to build off from that, something natural is now you see them in bibs and overalls with their big, big bare feet and sometimes a trucker hat. But the more religious of us, they get offended by that when really
that's just how it should be.
Yeah. This happened naturally. There was no large conspiracy. It just people started doing it because they liked it and it's cute and it's fun. And then you get the overly strict people. There's another word for it, but I can't think of it.
There's a right way to do it and a wrong way.
Yeah.
And that's
they're
the
very
wrong
regimented and they become offended by this. Now, I see getting offended when they put them in a fucking trans flag.
Yes.
Because that's, but what they, at that point, what they've done is what we're doing naturally, and then they subverted it to make us not fucking like it. It's the same thing with regimenting. Well, it's got to be done on this day. It's got to be done in this way. You have to wear these clothes. You have to have this person say this thing in this way. It's all to make us not like doing it.
Yes, but that's natural because the same house spirits that are typically depicted with peasant clothes from Sweden in Sweden, they're going to wear the folk of just the common everyday person in America, which is overalls, flannel, and a trucker hat, and probably barefoot.
Right, well, and this is how I know that they're trying to make us hate it. Movies.
Oh, God.
Our people love movies. And what have they done? They get in there and they're going to put their message in on the stories and they're just going to shove it in your face and call you a bigot if you don't like it. The same thing is done with the gnome,
like,
statues when they put them in the gay sandals and the gay shorts and the gay glasses. They're doing it. They're just shoving it in your face. You like this or you're a bigot.
Well, it's like the people arguing for Black Santa. You want to see how popular Black Santa is? Go to a store that sells Black Santas and White Santas. And this is the funniest thing, is the Black Santas.
Even in an area where Black people go, the Black Santas are still sitting there on fucking Easter.
Well, and the dumbest thing is that they don't even make them black. Because, surprise, surprise, you can't just paint a figurine that's designed to look white black. And all of a sudden, it's a black person.
Yeah, it just doesn't
work
that way.
Looks
and
more.
It's rejected, soundly.
Looks more like soot-covered Santa.
Right.
Which, honestly, if they leaned into that, they could probably sell the shit out of them.
Well, and to use the tomte thing, because I'm old enough, I remember some of the transition. And it's not even a transition, because we still make the traditional tomte. We also make the more modern tomte, the trucker tomte. At one point, the discussion was, oh, I'm not really a fan of the new ones wearing the bibs, overalls, and chewing on the string of hay or whatever. I like the old-fashioned ones with the red caps or the blue caps and the peasant garb of the Middle Ages. They preferred that. And okay, well, you like those. I don't really like those ones. And that was the end-all and be-all of it. Now it's gotten to the point, what's that culture? It's not the victimhood culture, but where they just get offended at everything.
That's close enough. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. They will find reasons to really, really hate and, oh my God, that's so offensive and it's against
our
culture.
They're just miserable people, though.
They're just mean fucking people. And if you're one of those people that get offended by such things to that degree, you're just mean. The most effective thing that you can do, like, this is what I do with those, the LGBTQ gnomes. I ignore them. I soundly reject them. I support people that soundly reject them. They're like, yeah, I don't like that. I'm like, yeah, I don't like that shit either.
Well, and then here's the thing is every culture has their own heroes, their own things that matter to them, their own customs, their own everyday things that they value.
Mm-hmm.
Like Winnie the Pooh is just as much a part of English paganism as elves are.
Mm-hmm.
Elves might have been there older, but what Winnie the Pooh is descended of, what it represents, what it's trying to convey, what it matters to people is just as much. And it's not an attempt on my part to try to belittle paganism, to make it simply fashionable.
Well,
or,
it is who we are.
Well, this is the thing. I don't understand why people fight the idea that culture and paganism are so intertwined, because we were pagan way longer. In some cases, up until like just 100 years ago.
Or less.
We were still pagan. And you think that the culture that grew up around that and spawned from it is somehow not pagan.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like, well, if you want to know what Christianity is, look at Christianity in Africa, South America, and China.
Oh,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. For these people, it's... Well, Christianity, and look at the cathedrals. No, we would do the cathedrals anyways. If we had the resources to do it, we would have done the cathedrals or something along those lines anyways, and we did it before Christianity even existed.
Well, and this is another thing, is like we brought up music festivals. That is how we celebrate a lot of things. Like our going theory, and it's just a hypothesis or theory, whatever word you want to use, is that things like Stonehenge were amphitheaters, mm-hmm. or are the remains of amphitheaters. And part of it's because of their acoustics, part of it's where they are, but I think a lot of it comes down to, it just makes sense. What would our people do to actually...
If we're going
to
build something big, we're going to use it for a thing.
Yes, and then we use natural amphitheaters. Now look at Red Rocks Amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
So it make... And then if you look at the shape, it looks the same, but it's a big music festival where everyone can come see it.
Yeah.
We've been doing this for a long time. And it's things like snowmen, scarecrows, talking to the squirrel at your bird feeder.
Well, and there's something else I want to bring up before we wrap this up is it's not the things, but it is the things. So like the weeping of cutting down the grove trees. It's not the trees themselves, but it is the trees.
Well,
it's not the... People get pissed off when the Muslims smash the statue of Mary. The statue that's been there for 250 years, and they just pick it up and they throw it on the ground. It's not the statue itself, but it is the statue. And it's not the fact that it's Mary, but it's more the fact that my grandmother, my mother, my great-grandmother, my great-great-great-grandmother, they're part of this statue that was just smashed. It's not the thing, but it's the thing. It's not the totem pole, but it is the totem pole, which is actually just a tent pole, by the way, when it's done our way. It's a highly decorated tent pole.
Well, this is how I... Part of what a lot of people don't realize is it's like a gnome. Like, let's say you got, like, one of those trucker gnomes out on your front porch, whether it's made out of wood or whether it's made out of porcelain or whatever, and someone comes along and just spray paints it and smashes it and kicks it and leaves it there. It's like, or even if it was done on accident and it wasn't, like, a malicious act, or it's like, you destroyed my gnome, and it's not the gnome, but you destroyed my gnome.
Yeah. It's so integral to who we are. It's hard for us to describe what it is. Well, but if anybody's ever experienced this, you know exactly what we're talking about. It's not the thing, but it's the thing, damn it.
Well, it's like altars. People are trying too hard with altars because you know what an altar is in our houses? It's the wall with the family photos. It's the mantle over the fireplace. It's the piano that has all the family photos.
It's the shelf where you keep the awards.
Yeah, it...
And the newspaper clippings or whatever it is.
Well, it's a lot like most people, and I'll use Christian idols because this is typically what people have. They will have their, I don't know, their idol to St. Billy Bob. And they'll put that right next to the family photos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the idol is not the saint, nor is a statue of a troll, the troll. But it represents the troll. It represents the thing that matters to you. It's why people will put grandfather's trumpet on the mantle as mm-hmm. well. It's why people will put their favorite books or the things that matter, the things that...
And it's not the things. It's what the things represent.
And it's not...
But it's not even what they represent on the surface.
No, or...
Like, that's grandfather's trumpet. Yes. The important part isn't the trumpet. It isn't that it is grandfather's trumpet. It's not that it's grandfather because it is a trumpet, but it's grandfather.
Well,
but it's not.
Well, another good example of this is people want a one-for-one. They want like, well, what is a shrine to us? Well, what is a temple to us? And first of all, part of the reason this is so fucked as a concept is because Christianity warps a lot of how we do mm-hmm. things.
But the describe it. Put yes. it in a box.
Put it in a box. Write it out. It's got to make complete sense. And then you have things like, we'll use our words, so like shrine, idol, temple, altar.
To describe the foreign thing.
Yeah, to describe the Japanese, the Hindu, the Middle Eastern, the Aztec. We'll describe these things using
and
our...
And then at that point, we're...
One of two
we feel like we aren't doing it right if we don't do it the way that they're doing it, but we're using our word to describe their thing because it's as close as you can get, even though that isn't what it is that we do.
Well, you want to know what first of all, shrine is such a nebulous concept, so what is a shrine is kind of like saying what's a small sacred place that there's like a waypoint object, like the sign for this
yeah,
is
it the sign? Is it the bench? Is it just the general area? What is it?
Well, and actually, I think one of the oldest, at least in the North versions we had of this, looking at history, looking at art, looking at concepts and all this other stuff, and our own nature, is trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the tree, but it's the tree. But it's not the space around the tree, but it's the space around the tree.
Right, and it's not the forest, but it is. It's also the trees, but it's not the trees, it's also the grass. But it's not just that. It's kind of the whole thing what it is.
Well, and we'll actually put effort into a tree to keep it alive if it's important. And then what happens if the tree finally dies? We'll make it into things.
Mm-hmm.
Because this actually happened, like in America, the chestnut tree, the American chestnut tree, was really important to us. And when we started cutting it down because they convinced us they were all dying, we made it into furniture. We made it into statues. We made it into things we could use. We brought it into our homes, and it mattered to us as a result. And naturally, when we do something like that, we didn't do it with the chestnut for the aforementioned purpose of the blight. We then...
The blight, giant air quotes.
Yes. We take one of the seeds, or a few, just to hedge our bets, and we plant it where the stump was.
Yeah.
We keep it growing. We keep it in the family.
Well, and then there's this other thing too, which the actually crowd or the technically crowd love to do. Oh, good news, everyone. The chestnut tree is coming back. Well, you see, it's not actually the American chestnut tree. That's the Asian chestnut tree because the American chestnut tree has all been removed and some people brought some of the Asian chestnuts over and replanted, and that's what the trees are that you're seeing now. This one chestnut tree 300 miles out in the middle of fucking nowhere, this is the Asian chestnut tree because somebody planted one half a state away. What?
Well, the American chestnut can come back anytime. It's just we got to stop picking up the soil and torching it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people...
I mean, they're doing their best
to wipe it out. and keep it from ever
coming. Well, to make their lies the truth.
Well, I don't think people realize just how much, like, we got food from trees before. Like,
oh, yeah.
Chestnuts used to be
a... Well, I've noticed these blights, they go around all the food trees. Like beech.
Yeah.
That's the last one I'm aware of. There's beech nuts. It is a food tree, a fruiting tree. It has these things called beech nuts that yes. grow from them. And people were eating them right up until the blight.
Yep.
The blight, giant air quotes, that was killing them. It seems to always happen with food trees.
Yes, but we're so close to it. And then this is the thing, is the English. And the English will do differently from the Welsh, from the Germans, from the Scandinavians.
Even though it's the same thing.
Yes.
It's the same thing, but it's different.
Well, here's the thing is, in America, Paul Bunyan is actually a pagan figure. A lot of people get kind of weird with this, partially because they've bought the propaganda that Paul Bunyan was invented by a lumber company.
Right.
He wasn't. He was a major figure in Northwoods folklore, who, I won't get into it too much, but basically his stories are ridiculously freaking pagan. Like, he's got like a dwarven freaking blacksmith working for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but because we're not brought up with that anymore, he's just turned into a generic lumberjack, even though...
And they've even gone so far as to villainize him.
Yes, but he wasn't like that originally. And we have our own heroes. It's why when people start doing Scandinavian stuff and they really focus in on, like, Ragnar Lothbrok or Harald Fairhair, I'm like, yeah, those guys can be neat. But first of all, the Scandinavians don't even view them the way most of the rest of the world mm-hmm. does, because apparently a lot of the Scandinavians don't even like Ragnar for the aforementioned reason of he brought Christianity partially to them and kind of made it part of them more, and they don't like that, even though they've stayed Christian for some reason. But in America, we have people like Hugh Glass or War Daddy, you know, the tank guy.
Yeah.
Or you start getting into, because we have a lot of badasses like
that they just don't teach us about.
Well, like, one of my favorites, I forgot his name.
And some of our badasses, they're badasses by accident.
Yes. Well, like, how many people know of the blacksmith of Brandywine? You know, the man who warned the American army of a plot against the British, and the British in retaliation killed his family.
Mm-hmm.
So the blacksmith went out with his hammer to his death to wail and killed, I think it was like, over 20 dead British, and he died. But I think what happened, if they remember the story correctly, is right before he died, people found him, and he was about dead, and he asked for a gun, and he took the gun, and he shot a British person far off, and said, "This is for my wife," basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a lot of them. There's an old guy that did something very similar. He survived all of that and yes. died of old age later.
You know, with his over 100 grandkids.
Yeah.
That dude was busy.
And he was an old man when he went. He was considered a daughter. Went out and killed a bunch of the Brits. He got stabbed and shot and hit in the head. And they left him for dead. And then he survives that. And then he dies years later after recovering and then going and killing more.
Yes. Well, and that's the other thing is our own people have had enough beef with each other that we have heroes who killed other members of our species. It happens. But we also we also took the heroic from the enemy side and put the Red Baron.
The Red Baron is the last notable one.
Yes, but it used to be
venerated heroes regardless of what side they was on.
Well, and it's part of the way that we basically revert back to ethnic faith is we just follow our nature, do what we do, we listen, we notice things, and then we venerate heroes, and with the heroes come the gods.
Yes. And there was something else I was going to bring up. Oh, yeah. I see some people, and this is good, but it's also not, but it is good, where people are pushing forward gods such as Freyr and Freya, and I'm seeing that a lot more, or the occasional Scotty or whatever. And this is great. People starting to, let's say, diversify. They're starting to diversify in their veneration. Okay, this is good. I encourage Scandinavians to venerate the Scandinavian gods and giants Do not forget the giants, the Scandinavians,
or
primarily.
Or the spirits.
Or the spirits and the Scandinavians. Primarily giant venerators.
And spirits, because the elves,
yeah, and
the spirits,
housemen. And then the gods came after.
Well,
this is what they did. I encourage the Irish to venerate the Irish gods. The Scots, venerate the Scottish gods. The French, or the Gauls, venerate the Gallic gods. Same way with the Alpines, the Iberians. Venerate your own gods. You can appreciate, like, I can appreciate Freyr. I can appreciate Freyr. He sounds kind of cool and uplifting and inspiring. This is great, especially when Scandinavians are describing them. It's like, unless they're just like of, and I'm like, well, what does of mean? But when they actually start describing who he is, I'm like, oh, I can get behind that. He sounds really cool. But I got my own over here.
Well, and that's the thing, is you can respect figures from other mythologies without needing to venerate them. Like, I like Heracles.
Mm-hmm.
I like Cú Chulainn. I like Finn McCool. There are some pretty cool figures in these different mythologies, but I got my own. And then here's...
Or what's that wolf one from down in the Spanish peninsula?
Vélico.
Vélico. He's cool. I'm not going to venerate him, but I really like the stories, the who Vélico is. And I'm like, yes, I get why they venerate him. Even without knowing that they're venerating him, I understand it. I get it. And it's inspiring. It's cool. It's interesting. But...
Well, it's like... And it becomes really easy when you genericize the gods to combine them. Like, one of the most blatant examples is trying to make Odin into the Old Man of the Mountain, mm-hmm. also known as Rubizol, but that's an insult name. But if you actually look at the stories, you would never say that. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't match up at all.
At all. Not in any
way,
shape, or form.
Most people,
you have to get esoteric about it to make it happen.
But most people are so removed from the two. It's like the Eddas don't even match up to what the Icelandics think, mm-hmm. which is where most of the stories are written down from.
Or who's the guys from Rome, the two brothers raised by the wolf?
Romulus and Remus.
Romulus and Remus. It is a good story. I like that story. I'm like, okay, I get why the Romans like this story. It is a cool story. That's where it stops.
Well, and then this is the thing a lot of people forget, is it's not just the gods. It's not even just the spirits, but like...
Well, in the case of Romulus and Remus, those are mortals.
Well, one of them did ascend. Like, I think Romulus was deified. But, like, look at... One of my favorite things to do is actually look up what the church complained about, because they'll say more than
they tell on themselves.
Yes. Well, like in Germany, some of the things they complained about the most was, one, ancestor veneration. They fucking hated us for that. Two, the bear. They had a 1,000-year-long attempted extermination and propaganda war against the freaking bear, because in Germany specifically, and a lot of the other areas, they considered it their main competition.
Mm-hmm.
They never stopped bitching about the fairy venerators in the Celtic lands. And the church specifically constantly bitched about how much the Swedes would not give up their household gods.
Well, and you read what the people that's bitching say, you can see where they then intentionally bastardize the stories as much as possible. That song, that Christmas song.
What
Child Is This? From Greensleeves. From a song that the priests couldn't get the people to stop singing. They still do it today.
Well, this is the thing, is the type of stories that we like. The music that we sing and play.
Well,
the games we play.
Here's the thing. You look up just What Child Is This? Oh, it was a song written and whatever. So therefore it didn't exist before that. Until you look at the priest that wrote that song, and he was complaining about the song before he put words to it. So the song existed before the fucking words. That song is not a Christian song.
Oh, there's
the lyrics are.
Oh, there.
But the song itself is not.
There's an epidemic of trying to steal folklore and claim it as your own.
Right. Well, you fucking Rapunzel.
For
a new thing.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Rapunzel isn't a European story. It's a fucking Persian story, and that's why we're going to put a Dravidian, because, you know, Hyperboreans didn't have anything. We didn't have no stories.
Oh,
we didn't have no food. We didn't have no customs. Everything that we did have was extremely regimented and okayed by the church.
Oh, I have seen the Sikhs try to claim that they were King Arthur, But, and this is the other thing a lot of people don't understand, is not only did we bring the very old and ancient forward with us. Like, I've seen freaking Cernunnos appear on a Mountain Dew can.
Yeah.
But if you go to the store and you look, especially in our land, so much stuff has our gods or spirits. Or one really popular thing that they do a lot is put a bear on something.
Yes.
Because they know we like bears.
Well, and in America, Paul Bunyan's everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
He's not titled Paul Bunyan, but he's always the lumberjack wearing the red flannel.
Giant.
Yeah. He's a giant wearing red flannel, and most of the time with an axe.
Yeah. Well, and then just like Winnie the Pooh is important in England and has become culturally significant and was drawn from older customs, because that's part of it, is we're taking the old and we're bringing it forward with new stories and new customs. In the U.S., we have things like peanuts. Every Halloween, there is peanut stuff everywhere because of the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Right.
And that was beloved, even though the movie's kind of meh.
Well, and the reason for it being made is kind of questionable.
Yes. But everything around us, yes, there are exceptions. And this is part of why people get so odd and strange and they try to regiment it, is because they can feel that around us right now, things aren't quite what they used to be. Things aren't quite making sense. I've brought it up before, is it used to be, to go pagan, all you had to do was stop going to church. And you could basically, you were just considered to revert to, as the church would put it, a heathen, a pagan, a werewolf.
Yes.
But now
and I've actually seen this, they will revert to their true nature.
Yes.
Like, actually written out by the priests and cardinals and bishops, they will revert to their true nature.
As a warning. And this is the thing, is it doesn't quite work that way anymore, but it's just because of all the noise.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're so removed. It is hard in the middle of a city to be who you are.
Well, and if you want to know what our true nature is, look around and see what's being pushed. It's not that. Because people will say, oh, yeah, your true nature. As soon as people left the church, then LGBTQ946 whatever popped up. Yeah, but look at how much that's propagandized. That isn't our nature. You don't have to teach somebody how to be themselves. You have to teach somebody how to not be themselves.
Well, and then this is the other thing, just to bring it up, is yes, these things become extremely local. Most pagan customs are extremely local. Like, there's one town with well dressing, where they take a bunch of foliage and plants and stuff, and they make a temporary mosaic, because it's all plants, around a well in this one town in England. I forget what it is called. And it's beautiful, but it's a really local custom. It's clearly not Christian, so you can call it pagan. It probably is, descended of it at least.
Right, and well, and because one time somebody might do a church with a cross on it. Well, yes, see, it's clearly Christian.
Well, they might do
Christian.
Biblical scenes. They might do folklore. They might do Harry Potter.
Right, but what I'm saying is the Christians, the historians in general, are going to say that's a Christian. They're going to try and take it away from our people and give it to Christianity, because one time they did a picture of a church or a picture of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Ignoring the other thousand examples where they didn't.
Well, there's this snake festival in Italy that has a saint. It's obviously not about the saint. It's about the snake goddess that was there before. Mm-hmm. But the saint idol's there every time they do it now, so it's Christian, right? No, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. But it's all of us, and the harder we try, the further away we get. It's like trying to grab smoke.
Well, and it's playing by somebody else's rules that keeps moving the goalposts and changing the rules as you go.
Well, it's why I'm like, why are we trying to get the Christians to acknowledge us? That doesn't, they don't, they'll never do
why
it.
Why do we even care?
Why? They're the ones that ripped us off.
Like, we aren't trying to convert anybody with this podcast. What we're trying to do is let people that's noticed know that they aren't alone in the noticing.
Well, and here's the thing, is it's not really that hard. At times I make paganism or ethnic faith sound really complicated, because I'm like, it's really local and it's really... But if you just allow it... It's not that complicated. Like, this town in England will do it different from this town in England. And
you can think of it like dinner. Everybody has dinner. But do you have dinner together? Do you have dinner separately? Do you have dinner at a table? Does everybody gather in the living room and eat dinner together off in their laps? All of these things are equally fucking valid. Well, I suggest personally myself, everybody eat together, whether it's at a table or sitting around in a circle with their food in their lap, talking or sitting in silence eating. I don't care. But all of these things, everybody has dinner. How are you supposed to have dinner? Who the fuck is to say?
Yeah, that's the thing, is all these things are going to be different. It's like, how do you do Yuletide? How do you do Christmas? How do you do Sinterklaas? How do you do Krampusnacht? What is the correct way to do these things? I mean, there are holidays like Maslenista. I've never celebrated Maslenista. It's a Slavic holiday.
Yeah, honestly, I don't even know what Maslenista is.
I think it's Pancake Day. It's an important holiday.
Oh, Pancake
over there.
Day. That sounds fun.
It does sound fun.
Do they throw the pancakes? I hope that they throw the pancakes.
I don't know about the throwing of the pancakes.
They should
throw
the pancakes.
There are costumes, though.
If they don't throw the pancakes yet, they should start throwing the pancakes. If I know that we got a couple Slavic listeners, please start throwing pancakes on Pancake Day because it's funny. But, and it's similar to the
story
Hala story,
of Holda, yeah.
Which I love that story because it's silly and it's fun.
Well, and that's another thing, is that's one of the things the church used to complain about 1,000 years ago. They were bitching about how people wouldn't let go of the witch Holda.
Yeah.
So it's, we are who we are. We don't even think about it. It's why Joan of Arc can be 99% pagan, venerate a fairy tree, and take the outfit and the role of the person representing the god, much as people used to do for the Morrigan or now for Santa Claus, mm-hmm. and never bat an eye and think she's Christian until she's getting burned as a witch.
And then it's like, what?
I wasn't? This is news to me. It's because we're just too close to it to realize. And then we have a really poor understanding, by and large, for most of our people, what Christianity is.
Right.
A really, really poor understanding.
And we've been lied to about who we are. I mean, we know who we are, but we've been told, well, you see, you had to be taught that. That's the outside culture dictated by this and that and this other thing. How many people seen people acting against their own nature because they think it's what is right? They've been taught explicitly to do that, and you can see the misery and the fear in their eyes. And they know that they're miserable and they're scared. As they're, I don't know, brah.
Well, and another thing people don't seem to realize is, okay, taking any of the countries as a lump sum, while I used that for a generic term, like this is for, there's a reason on the website that we split the different gods up by geography rather than by, like, country.
Yeah.
Or pantheon, quote unquote, is because it's more accurate. It's like, is Othin in Germany? Yes, but not everywhere, and he's not known as Wotan. He's known as Othin.
And because you got areas where you have both Othin and Wotan. So why have both if they're the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Are you saying that we're too stupid to be able to pronounce the differences?
Well,
because I've had people argue that with me. Well, no, you see, V's, W's, and O's, they're all interchangeable. So then they start saying words, and I started intentionally replacing the front sound.
Well, it's like in the...
And they get mad. They're like, no, that's not what that means. That means this other thing. But you said that these are interchangeable, and I can't make the O sound.
Well, it's like most people in England might know about Robin Hood, but the stories, the actual folklore of Robin Hood is centered around a certain area and kind of spreads from mm-hmm. there. The same is true of Paul Bunyan. Once you get out of the North Woods, he's kind of just a lumberjack. Or Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett, they're more important in their home territory of like Central Appalachia.
Right.
And like
well,
the
and
older
when it comes
content.
To the language thing, if a word is important, a figure is important, we will learn how to say the word correctly. Like, I don't know, everybody says Julius Caesar. And then somebody renowned comes out and says, well, you know, actually with the language, it's supposed to be Julio Kaiser. People will start pronouncing it Julio Kaiser because it matters. And correct people that are saying Julius Caesar. Yes, Julius Caesar, it's supposed to be said Julio Kaiser. And then eventually Julius Caesar will disappear. And he's just Julio Kaiser.
Well, and to prove the point, Davy Crockett Odin.
Yeah.
Thori.
So we try to say words correctly. We will practice the words so that we can say it correctly because we like the feeling that we get when we say it correctly. Like parsley food français.
At henna.
Instead of parlez-vous français. And we even try to put on the French accent. And if we hear the person with the French accent, we will mimic it until we can do it right. We aren't a species that's just like, fuck it, good enough. We are not the good enough species. You want to see the good enough species? Go to Dravidia. Go to China. Those are the good enough species.
Well,
and that's the species where the buildings fall down because fuck it, good enough.
Well, and it comes down to how we build our houses, how we communicate, how we get married. Like, I brought this up many, many times. Getting how our customs are built in the U.S., because I'm going to use that because that's what I know, of getting married are built. They all had a reason. But once you realize the reason, you also realize why most people just coupled. Yeah. They didn't make a big deal out of it because, like, okay, so you have
And just start calling each other, this is my man, this is my wife.
Yeah. Well, because husband means head of household. Mm-hmm. That's why it was typically ascribed to the man, but it can be ascribed to the woman.
And it has been.
Well, and wife just means woman.
Right.
But when it comes to things like...
But they never did a husband and wife. If the wife was the husband, it would be man and wife. If the man is the husband, then it's husband and wife.
Yeah, they don't do husband and man, I think.
Yeah.
But within the customs, just to
yeah,
run
yeah,
through.
Yeah, that's the way I meant it. Translate gibberish to English.
Translate Jeffish to English.
Yes.
But in the weddings in America, you have the bridesmaids, the groom, you have the wife, the eventual wife, the bride walking up a very short procession to the altar to get married. Mm-hmm. There's usually someone of importance. For some reason, we just standardized it as a priest or a lawyer or something.
Right, but once upon a time, it would have been, I don't know, the local leader, it would have been, so a chieftain, it might have been her father, it might have been...
The pirate captain.
His brother, the pirate captain, the fairy captain, whatever. Somebody important that oversees that important person that everybody trusts says, yes, those two are together. Okay, well, those two are together.
Yes. And then you have the bridesmaids and the grooms. People get married. They go on a honeymoon. There was usually an engagement period up to that point. Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds good. Except these customs, the reason they feel so tacked on so extra is because they are.
Yeah.
Because the bridesmaids used to be decoy brides.
Mm-hmm.
The groomsmen used to be bodyguards. The man used to run a gauntlet so that anybody that objected to the wedding
right. So
could do
the bachelor
something.
Party.
Yeah.
That's what the bachelor party was.
Basically, think like constructive fight club with the potential to be like, no, I want to marry her instead.
Well, the bachelor party, which now it doesn't feel right and everybody wants a bachelor party. What it was that trial. And then there's a party afterwards.
Yeah, it never sat right with me that the idea was to get like a stripper or something. If I'm just about to get married to a woman, I'm not really...
Yeah, why are we doing this?
It's not a good sign to go out to a stripper.
But a party with just a bunch of people, and then you did a thing. And they're celebrating the fact that you did the thing, that you are dedicated to this. You proved it. Well, that sits completely different. It feels solid. I've talked to people in real life, described this, and they're like, that makes so much more sense.
And it would work better.
Yeah.
And then you have the procession, which a woman would walk from her home to her husband's home, usually where they would get married. And this could be over mountains. And
could be.
How straight she could walk.
And here's the thing. Most generally, it wasn't. Most generally, it was across the village.
Yeah, so it wasn't very long. But the big marriages might be like that.
Right, when you got two kingdoms,
yeah,
two different tribes, and their leaders are getting married to each other.
The woman will probably have a retinue as well.
Right.
You know, guards.
Well,
and
for sure, she's going to have a retinue.
Yeah.
To keep her alive.
Yeah.
Because there's these guards things called bandits and animals.
Guards and cooks.
Rivers, mountains. There's dangers on the way.
Yes. And then, like I said, decoy brides for bridesmaids, which is why we didn't used to just put them in hideous garb to make the bride look better. Because they were supposed to basically, if shit got real, they wouldn't know which was the real bride.
Right.
And then you also had the groomsmen as the guardians. The engagement period's actually the trial marriage. You live together, you do the role of man and wife.
Typically before the marriage.
Yes, try to get pregnant to prove
that's why the honeymoon seems... Because I've talked to people, oh, I loved my honeymoon, so on and so forth, but something just felt off about it. I don't know why people will open up to me about stuff like this, but they do. And I'm like, well, it's because the honeymoon was supposed to come before the marriage.
Well,
and they're like, ah.
Oh. Well, and the honeymoon actually, specifically the honeymoon, because the honeymoon and engagement's all kind of wibbly-wobbly now. The honeymoon was specifically for, by and large, rich arranged marriages, and it was named after the fact that they'd give you a month's worth of mead and put you somewhere for basically a lunar month.
And it was common for women to be pregnant at the coupling ceremony.
Yes. The only reason to bother with a honeymoon is if the two weren't really well known. It's mostly for political marriages.
Yeah.
There's no reason for two people that have lived in the same village their whole life.
I mean, we're not married. All... nobility and merchants.
Yeah, not everybody has to worry about their wedding getting raided. Not everybody has to worry about traveling over mountains. Not everybody has to get married for political reasons.
As a matter of fact, I'd say most people don't and didn't.
Which is why, as people are kind of slowly, it might not seem that way, but we're kind of trending back towards mean. We're just getting married. We're not even having a party anymore.
Well, and that's why we have so much propaganda shoved in our face now. They're shoving it down our throats because we are returning to mean.
Yeah. It's not that the big important... not the people that have the potential for risk should not continue to do these older customs like the honeymoon and stuff like that. But I would argue the only things most normal people really need if you want to do these customs are procession... and gauntlet, mostly to make sure you actually want to do this.
Right.
And then...
have somebody of import to the families.
Yeah, and then the engagement period, because this allows you to make sure you're compatible.
Right.
And that you will work as a team and can possibly get pregnant. But in general, most of the grandeur, the great wedding with, like, all the bridal journals and stuff, it's not a thing. It's like, even the wedding dress, it's just supposed to be your prettiest dress. There might be a traditional dress in these areas, but it was just a show of wealth.
Right. All right. Well, we did actually overshoot this by a bit. So, yeah, I think we pretty much talked this one out for now without delving into other stuff. So I'm going to end it, and I'm going to say that, you know, our ethnic way, it is like riding a bike. Just get on it. Just go do it. And if you think about it too hard, you're going to fall over.
Yes, and... it's not a religion. It's older, it's better, it's more integral and whole than that. You don't need a church, you don't need ritual, not in that way. We just need to be us, and the rest will either remember or will notice once again.